Welcome to The Lorraine Murphy Show. I'm an entrepreneur on my second business, a mentor, an author, wife to a fellow entrepreneur, and mother to a magical little girl. On my podcast, I explore topics that fascinate me that will help you unlock ideas to rise even higher in your life. Myself and my special guests will be talking entrepreneurship and how to build better businesses, organization and figuring out how to get more shit done quicker and smarter, staying in touch with our soul, and how to blend business babies with real babies. Let's jump in to this week's episode. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Lorraine Murphy Show. So we are approaching the end of my connection season and I'm really, really, really excited to be talking about this topic that we're talking about today because, as you're about to learn, sleep is one of the most fundamental flagstones of a healthy, happy, positive, optimistic lifestyle. And my special guest today is just so well placed to talk about this topic. I've wanted to dive into this topic for ages. And when Lisa Maltman popped up at one of my events, I found the perfect person to speak to. And I really do know from speaking to my community that far too many women amongst us are struggling with their sleep. And as we discuss in this week's episode, the consequences of ongoing sleep deprivation are really far-reaching. I learned this week that a terrifying 40% of adults experience sleep deprivation, which is just like, yeah, couldn't believe it was that high. That's almost one in two people, if we think about it, are experiencing sleep deprivation right now. So Lisa is the founder and owner of The Sleep Connection, and she is passionate about improving lives through healthy sleep. She delivers wellness sleep programs to both corporate audiences and to schools to address the growing concern regarding the impact insufficient sleep is having on our wellness, our well-being, and our productivity. And she's also an invited speaker at key mental health and well-being conferences. In our chat, myself and Lisa cover how her own experience of sleep issues affected her life and set her on the path she's on now. The most common three issues that people struggle with when it comes to sleep. The two distinct groups of people who are sleep deprived, they're the can't sleeps and the won't sleeps. She explains what she means by that in our chat. The long-term impacts of ongoing or chronic sleep deprivation, how much sleep we really need, the three different stages of sleep, the concept of chronotypes, the three key chronotypes, and how that affects the kind of sleep that we need. How the stories we tell ourselves about sleep can have a detrimental effect on our ability to actually get adequate sleep. The fascinating link between sleep and unwanted weight gain. This is really, yeah, I learned a lot from her points here. Her top tips on effective napping and her thoughts on the nappuccino phenomenon. If you don't know what a nappuccino is, you're about to find out. Whether or not it's possible to catch up on sleep debt, this is something I've always wanted to know. Why we can feel exhausted after drinking alcohol the night before, even if we feel like we've had enough, inverted commas, sleep. Sleep thieves and what the most challenging ones are for most of us. Her advice for parents experiencing child-related sleep deprivation and a genius reframe to reduce parental bickering over sleep. God knows myself and Wade have had our own fair share of parental bickering when it comes to this topic. Where to go for help if we're having consistent issues with our sleep. This is really, really important. And also how sleep impacts our body's ability to make and regulate hormones. And I know from talking again to women in my community that hormone balancing and regulation is a really big focus for quite a few of you listening. So without further chat, let me bring on the amazing Lisa Maltman as we talk about the sleep connection this week. Hello, Lisa. Welcome to this show. I'm very excited to talk about sleep with you today.
Thank you so much for having me on, Lorraine. I'm very excited to be here today after listening to so many of your podcasts.
Oh, thank you.
Very grateful to do on my longer trips.
Thank you. I think I accompany a lot of people on long drives. It's probably good I live in Australia. So I'm really excited to talk about this topic. So we're also talking about sleep, and it's been a topic that I know a lot of my community have struggled with on and off and some chronically over the years. It's also challenge I've had, particularly earlier last year, I had some pretty big sleep issues going on. So you popped up on one of my online workshops a few months ago. And as soon as you said what you did, I said, oh my gosh, I have to get you on the show at some point. And as listeners probably know at this point, this season is all about the topic of connection.
And I can think of few things more worthwhile connecting into than our sleep, because I just think it's such an important foundation for pretty much everything in our lives, which I'm sure we'll get into on this chat as well. So thank you so much for joining me and sharing all your wisdom with me.
Absolutely.
So can you, first of all, so your business is obviously called The Sleep Connection. Could you share with us the background of how you came to create it? Like, how did you happen across this space yourself? What's been your journey to get here?
Yes. So I was working in the area of adult sleep health, so in the area of adult sleep apnea, which probably many of you have heard about. Mm-hmm. And it was there that I started to realise the impact of sleep on some of the key issues, health issues in Australia, so depression, diabetes, heart disease. And then I realised that, and then I started working in corporate health. But interestingly, during working for a company that talked about sleep, there was a huge amount of stress in that environment, and I ended up with really chronic insomnia, which, you know, I'll go into a bit later. And it was just ironic. Everybody had some level of stress, and it might have been reflux, but my default pattern, unfortunately, ended up being insomnia. And then I moved into the area of corporate health. And then I bumped into a girlfriend who works in a really big boys' school in Sydney, a well-known boys' school, and she was working with year six children, and she said, you really need to start something up for children. This is becoming a major issue in schools to do with learning, but particularly mental health. And I remember getting goosebumps and then going home and actually looking up one of the key sleep specialists in Sydney that works with children and adolescents and said, is anyone doing anything in schools? And he said, no, but we would really love them to. So I took a leap of faith.
Sounds like a bit of a God moment or a soul whisper.
Very much, very much. And it was a huge leap of faith. I actually handed my resignation in the following week.
Wow.
Yes, and linked up with some of the key, you know, psychologists and sleep specialists and launched a Sleep Connection, which, as you would know, sounds very easy in hindsight. Yeah. But then started contacting schools and quite early on ended up on Channel 9 and a couple of news and newspapers. But I think even then, that was the beginning of sleep really taking off. I don't think it was just me observing that, like when you get a red car, you
Yes.
I'll get your feedback on this, but I think generally the whole area of sleep has been gaining huge momentum.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know about you, but I think Arianna Huffington has a huge amount to do with that as well. So in her book Thrive, she talked about sleep being such a core pillar, and I don't feel like it, I think she I don't feel like it was ever talked about in the mainstream sense before. And just for someone like her, I mean, she opens that book with a really powerful anecdote about her literally collapsing with exhaustion and cracking her forehead off the desk and waking up in a pool of her own blood on the floor. And a lot of that was, a lot of what contributed to her ending up in that state was just pushing herself way too hard. She talked a lot about that macho culture of sleep where it's almost competitive to see who's got less sleep.
The badge of honor.
Yeah, exactly. So do you reckon that's what's put it on the agenda for people?
I think so. And I think it's just finally time that we're not just looking at exercise and, you know, nutrition and relationships, that we're finally realising that a lot of people are saying sleep will impact you way more than any of those. And I guess the impact on our mental health is becoming bigger and bigger as mental health just keeps getting bigger and bigger. So, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And can you speak to, so I had sleep issues last year in terms of actually experiencing night sweats, which was stress related. So that's, you know, small child, various different points in Lexi's lifetime. But I don't feel like, speaking very honestly, I've ever had like major issues with sleep. So you've obviously been through that journey yourself. Can you speak to it from almost like with your personal hat on as opposed to a professional hat on? How was it? Like, how did it impact your life? Having those issues?
It was the absolute pits. Cause I guess we all have, like you've describe them, we all have different relationships with poor sleep. And you know, I've had them not so long ago relating to menopause, but that's another topic. I'm a different stage to half of your beautiful women out there with their young children or different ages. But it was so chronic, I literally thought I was going mad. And
how about we talking, Lisa, like not sleeping at all, like what was rock bottom like in terms of your sleep patterns?
I felt like I was just getting a couple of hours sleep literally, and it was broken up all during the night. And then I just wake up and just feel like I was going mad, and just the self-destruction, I would have to say. It was, I remember saying something, I probably only told, you know, one or two friends, just the bottom that it got to, and they go, oh my gosh, really? And I think it was created by a non-stop stressful work environment, but then a fairly catastrophic event that happened. And at that stage, I just went, you know what, my family and everything else are way too important. So I actually handed in my resignation because I knew I couldn't both help this family that were, you know, going through this catastrophe and look after my family and look after myself. So it was, yeah, it was rock bottomed from a mental health point of view and just really just existing, I guess, just day by day. Yeah.
Wow. And how long was your sleep that messed up for, do you reckon?
In that place.
As in, well, sorry, let me just ask you that in a slightly different way. I tend to talk to women and I do wonder how much of, I know there's obviously serious sleep issues going on for people, but also how much of the sleep issues are exacerbated by the stories we tell ourselves. So, you know, for example, I'm just not a good sleeper or something like that. So how long do you reckon you were just in that really, as you said, that shit spot with your sleep for, are we talking years?
I'd actually say 1 to 2 years, really.
Jesus Christ, you poor thing.
Yeah.
That's hectic.
So, but you're right about the story that you're telling, and that was actually one message I do want to get across to people today is, don't let what I'm saying about the negativities about sleep make things worse for you. So,
yes, lovely, my friend. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just about going, okay, I need to improve my sleep, but don't go, oh my gosh, she said that this happens when you don't get sleep. It's like, no, just recognize and don't get into that cycle.
Yeah, love that. Thank you. And it's, I mean, those stories apply to everything. I mean, we can tell ourselves stories that we're always 10 minutes late for something. We tell ourselves, I talk about this a lot with my organization hat on, that so much of turning around the Titanic, if you feel like you're just a hopeless case when it comes to organization, almost like the foundation of changing your behavior is changing your self-talk. Because as long as you tell yourself that you're crap at organization, that's the reality you're going to create. So I think it's something I love that we're actually starting from this point in this chat, because I think maybe the first thing for us to examine if we're not sleeping well is how much of that is the story we're telling ourselves as well.
Yep.
And of course, proactively addressing the other issues at the same time.
Also understanding the impact of stress, which I didn't understand that whole cycle, and realizing that sleep is a 24-hour situation. So we think of it as being a nighttime affliction, and we might fix all these sleep tips that, you know, I'll share some later, but if you're not understanding that it's 24-hour, and if you're constantly living in flight or fright during the day and not addressing your stress situation, then that cycle continues no matter whether you stop drinking caffeine, alcohol, get off the technology, all those different things.
Yeah, that's, I want to come back to that. That sounds fascinating when you're talking about the 24-hour cycle. So in the research that you very kindly sent me through before we were chat, we came to chat today, you said that 40%, I couldn't believe how high that stat was, of adults experience sleep deprivation. So A, holy crap, that is terrifying. And what do you see are the most common three issues that people do experience? Like, what's contributing to that 40%, do you think?
I think it's, I would just say in summary, there are three different groups of people.
Yeah.
This does answer your question.
It's okay, I trust you.
I think firstly we've got people whose sleep comes really easily too. And then we've got the category of people who aren't getting sufficient sleep. And within those two categories, I would say there's people who can't sleep and then people who won't sleep. So can't sleep are those who aren't able to get enough sleep due to stress, anxiety, or a sleep disorder. And then the won't sleep is just simply not prioritizing sleep and their time management and their habits. So it's really breaking into those two things. So if you look at the three common issues in the can't sleep, it would be, you know, things like stress, insomnia, snoring, sleep apnea, those sort of things. And then won't sleep is just, you know, too much going on, workload, all those sort of things. Mm. So I think it's really important to define why you're not getting enough sleep, whether it's inability to sleep or just like Arianna Huffington choosing to prioritize other things.
Yeah, that's so powerful. So sorry, can you give me those again? So can't sleep is insomnia.
Can't sleep is difficulty to stress or insomnia, anxiety, all those sort of things, or a physical sleep disorder such as snoring or sleep apnea.
Yeah.
And then won't sleep are more your habits and priorities.
Yeah. I mean, and I was joking with you getting on this call today that I'm my version of sleep deprived today, because I I chose, and you're right to draw this disparity as well. It was all my decisions. Yesterday, I really wanted to get my book into my publisher, so I got over half of my book over to my publisher yesterday. And as a result, there was some things that needed to get done yesterday. For example, sending you the questions for our chat today. And I put in a night shift last night of getting essentially my MITs, my most important tasks that weren't book related, done. So I got to bed at what it would have been just after 10, which is relatively late for me. Yes. And then Lexi was awake during the night. She was coughing a bit during the night. So she was awake. And then once I settled her, then you know, your brain's going. So I feel like, yeah, I'm very much in the won't sleep. So that makes total sense. Like they were all, I chose to prioritize my work last night as opposed to getting to bed at 8:39, which is definitely my goal tonight. So I love that you've drawn that disparity. Thank you. That's really helpful.
And obviously it's easier said than done to do with priorities, but it's just meaning that some people physically can't fall asleep.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. So I know, I mean, I'm feeling it today. I actually had a 15-minute power nap before I called you today.
Oh, just to well get done you.
Just to charge myself up. I'm also using the pregnancy card, though, I have to say on that. But yeah, I had my lunch and I was going to power through and tick off a task. And I was like, you know what, Lorraine, just set your timer for 20 minutes. And I had all my podcasting equipment set up, so I knew I could just walk upstairs and call you. And I have to say, I feel so much better just for that little 15-minute power up.
So that's wonderful. I wouldn't want this podcast to be painful for you.
Oh God, no, no. And it would, you know what? This is fun. Like this is easy. I'm more thinking about picking up the 4-year-old, the three almost 4-year-old, from school at 5. Like that's when they're, that's when I get shitty and snappy because yeah, she, you know, we talked about this earlier. They pick up on your energy. So if you're tired, so it was more future proofing myself for this evening rather than my afternoon of work. This is
future self. Right.
Yeah. Future self for tonight. So I know all of us listening or you and I talking will know the short-term impact of sleep deprivation. You know, the fact that you're low mood, energy levels are low, productivity is low. I know for me, if I'm not today, because it was just a one night thing last night, but if it's a couple of nights, I'm craving, you know, coffee, I mean, not coffee, I'm more of a cacao or green tea, sugar, you know, you're kind of craving those carbs and so on to almost keep you going. But what's the long-term impact of ongoing sleep deprivation? And just for this, actually, can I clarify this? Because I always thought that chronic was really bad, like really bad pain. Yeah. And what I learned a few, I think it was like last year, and I don't know, it's just such a simple thing, but I've been talking about it a lot in my work. And what chronic actually means is it's ongoing. So it's almost like it could just be low grade pain, but it's ongoing,
exactly.
Which
okay.
is almost more of a drain than just having one short, sharp pain, which would be acute pain versus yeah. chronic. So when I'm talking about this, I'm talking about chronic sleep deprivation, where it's ongoing as you know, God help you, experienced over those one to two year period. So what are the impacts of sleep deprivation when it's getting into that chronic stage?
I think there are different aspects. So I think in terms of even just to do with weight gain, for example, mm-hmm. So we often, you know, spend so much time talking about exercise and food in relation to weight, but just so understanding true. That sleep actually impacts our metabolism and weight. And I'll just give,
you never think about that, do you? It's always yeah. exercise and food. That's it.
I know. And wow. If you want some show notes, I'll be giving you there's a book called The Sleep Doctor's Diet Plan. So Dr. Michael Bruce has written a whole book on this. But just in really brief summary, when you aren't getting the sleep that they need, it impacts two appetite hormones. One's called yes. ghrelin, which is your greedy hormone.
Yeah.
And that rises in your system. So you have more of it, which means you go, oh, I'm still hungry. I'm going to keep eating. And normally it's, you know, what you were saying, high sugar food. Food's not great for your energy and mood. And then leptin, which actually tells your brain that you're full, doesn't work as well. So we go, oh, we're not full. Hey, let's keep eating. So over a period of time,
interesting,
it has a massive impact on the food choices and the fact that we don't feel full. And that can be an ongoing thing and have an issue with, you know, general overweight, but also obesity. But also even in relation to diabetes, for example, just over a period of 6 nights of getting little sleep, it actually puts us in a pre-diabetic state.
How many nights? People. 6 nights?
6 nights at 4 hours. Yeah. So that's just in a short term. We're not talking chronic here. So you think, I actually truly believe that the majority of diseases are preventative.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, same with things like diabetes and the weight that is such an issue in our society. Also our cardiovascular system. So it just increases our blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got the increased risk of, you know, heart disease and stroke and those sort of things long term. One of the ones that's really, I don't know, hits me home hard is just the impact on some of our brain diseases. Mm. So diseases such as Alzheimer's, for example. So when we don't get the sleep we need, we have what's called a glymphatic system. A little bit of science for you.
Did you say glymphatic system?
Glymphatic as opposed to lymphatic.
Okay, this is all new to me. Tell me. Fascinated.
So the lymphatic system looks after your body, but the glymphatic system, when you have a fabulous night's sleep, the glymphatic system works away at cleaning your brain while you sleep. So if you're not being it's very fascinating when you actually, you know, see what's happening. So when you're not getting enough sleep, that process is not working effectively. So you're not getting that beautiful, clean brain being washed away. And with something like Alzheimer's, where, you know, the plaques and everything aren't being washed away, then that's not happening. And my father died from Alzheimer's about 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And just before that, we found out that he had what's called sleep apnea, which means he wasn't getting that deep sleep and that glymphatic system wasn't working efficiently.
That's heartbreaking, yeah.
So, so you realise that just simply that glymphatic system not working properly can then impact, you know, your brain being beautiful and fresh and clean, and diseases like Alzheimer's, which they're just researching, just even the last couple of years, the impact. So, so I guess.
God, that is heartbreaking. So you think how different his experience might have been if he had have known and had have been able to treat the sleep apnea sooner.
Yes. It's a little challenging with someone with Alzheimer's to use a CPAP machine, let me tell you.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. That's awful.
Yes, thank you. So, yes, I guess the weight gain, the fact that long-term to do with exercise, when we don't sleep well, we're not motivated. So we're less likely to exercise. So that whole cycle to do with weight gain, exercise, our immune system. So when we don't get a great night's sleep, our immune system is impacted. So in the short term, that's coughs and colds. But in the long term, it can be cancers and other different diseases. So
It's almost like our immune system erodes over time and then you just become more and more susceptible to what's happening.
Those key issues in Australia to do with, you know, immunity, our cardiovascular, diabetes, Alzheimer's, weight gain, all those key health issues in Australia. And we know it impacts our mood, but just in relation to our mental health, it's very much a two-way situation. So mental health can impact sleep and sleep can impact mental health.
Yes.
But it's less out there about sleep impacting on mental health. So when I talk about the impact of sleep on mental health, I explain why, because I always wanted to know the why. So when we don't get enough sleep, it impacts two parts of our brain. And one's, do you want me to go into this?
Yeah, please. I'm loving the science. Thank you.
So one's called our prefrontal cortex, which is how we think rationally during the day.
Yeah.
So when we don't get our decision making, which is key when you're in a big role or anything, it's key. So when we don't get enough sleep, that part of our brain doesn't work as effectively and dips down, so we're not making those rational decisions like we would normally would. Mm-hmm. And then the opposite happens in the emotional part of the brain, so that overreacts. So if you saw a picture of your brain when you'd had lots of sleep versus not much sleep, the MRI of your brain without much sleep would see a lot more activity going on
because you're more emotional.
Yes. So if I say to an audience, how do you feel when you don't get enough sleep, they'll give lots of things to do with their productivity and their physical health. But the main answers they'll give are moody, it impacts my relationships, I feel angry. Whether they're a 12-year-old or whether they're an adult, they'll give all these answers. And I explain that impact on those two parts of the brain. But also over a period of time, those two parts of the brain don't talk very well together. So we will think more negatively than positively over a long period of time. So if you think you've got 4 out of 10 adults not getting enough sleep, and a lot more with our older children, and we've got a rise in anxiety and depression, then these two are closely linked.
Yeah.
And often, you know, often being misdiagnosed. And so for me, my passion in getting the message out there, yes, is in productivity and physical health, but it's that whole impact on our mental health.
Mm.
We know it, but it's actually having it explained to you, which, you know, makes you go, wow. That message needs to get out there.
It really does. Wow. This is really eye-opening for me. Thank you. It really is. So on that, how much sleep do you think we actually need? Because I feel like we kind of go with the Henry Ford, model of 8 hours sleep, 8 hours work, 8 hours rest. Whereas I would imagine if I was to do a straw poll of people listening to this episode right now, I'd imagine very few people are actually getting 8 hours. Personally, I feel like 7 hours is my sweet spot. Like if I can go to bed, get to sleep at a good time, I'll quite organically wake up 7 hours later. It seems to be mine. Do you think there is like a, I don't want to say hard and fast, but like almost like a standard amount of sleep that is optimum for adults, or does it shift from person to person?
It's a great question. It varies. With adults, they suggest that 7 to 9 hours is about the right amount. And for those of you wanting to know about children, I'll put, because you've all got people in your worlds different ages, so I'll put those in the show notes. But with adults, around 7 to 9 hours. So lots like you can, you know, get away on 7 hours. Some need more. So I think what's really important to know is that there are, you know, three key types of sleepers in the world. We do have what's called a short sleeper.
Yeah.
And they're the sort of person who can get away with 5 to 6 hours sleep and still function amazingly, be highly motivated, getting lots done.
Because I think Margaret Thatcher, from memory, slept something like 5 hours a night for her entire time as Prime Minister of the UK. Tiny amount of sleep. So yeah, that's our short sleeper.
And unfortunately, she ended up with Alzheimer's.
That is so, oh my God, you are so right. Of course you did.
So I'll get to the second person in a minute, which
would
probably be her. So what we need to realise is that the short sleeper, the 5 to 6 hour, function amazingly, is only about 1 to 3% of the population. And thought to be genetic. So we'll often see those running through families. And then the second sleeper is the wannabe short sleeper, which is probably that 40% that aren't getting the sleep that they need. So they go, sleep's for the weak. We can sleep when you're dead. We've all got these things to do. So, you know, they become the wannabe short sleeper, often giving me the answers, you know, when I say to people how they feel, you know, all that moody, angry, all those sort of things.
Yeah. So I just Googled it, Lisa, as you were talking there. 4 hours sleep she got by on. That's what she used to do. And you're right, she got Alzheimer's. Yeah, wow. Okay, sorry, continue.
No, that's right. So short sleeper, and then we have the wannabe short sleepers, and then my aim is just for people to work out how many hours they need to be a normal sleeper and chilled out and, you know, waking up the person that they want to be. So that for adults can be anything between 7 and 9, unless you're one of the short sleepers.
Okay. So is the third group normal sleepers then? Is that what you call them?
Yes.
Okay. So got short, want to be short, and normal.
Yes.
Got it. Makes sense. Thank you. Okay, I have so many technical questions for you coming up.
More and more is going to come out that you didn't think you'd ask.
I literally have, I've written 4 more questions that I need to ask you. So I'm like, okay, Lorraine, you need to make this snappy. So with sleep, so my dad used to always say to us when we were a kid, you need to go to bed earlier because an hour of sleep before midnight is worth 2 hours after midnight. Is that true?
I think I was hearing a professor talk about this the other day.
Because it's a big thing, isn't it? Like that's what we would commonly...
I know, he was talking about it as being one of the key sleep myths. So I think where we get that from is the first part of our sleep is the most important. So when we have sleep, I'll go through the sleep cycles or the stages of sleep a little in a moment, but a lot of our deep sleep, which is our best quality sleep, is in the first part of the evening. So they're possibly referring to that it's actually more the first part of your sleep. And if you haven't had a lot of sleep, then you kind of have this rebound deep sleep to try and catch up, because that's the most important sleep for your emotions, for you physically, all that sort of thing. And then also
it sounds like you need to get out of your overdraft, is that what you mean?
Yes. So you'll go back into that deep sleep. So I think it refers more to the fact that deep sleep is the quality sleep, and that's in the first part of the night versus rapid eye movement later in the night. Also, the more aligned to sunlight we are, then the better we feel. So if you're closer to, you know, going to bed at 8, 9, 10 versus 11, 12, 1, then our body clock aligns with light. So light's one of the key impacts on our body clock, which makes it very challenging for shift workers to feel, even if they got quality sleep, to feel as good as they could. So I think that's more where that comes from.
Okay, got it. That makes sense. I literally had like 2 more questions jump in as you were talking. Would you jump into the sleep cycles? Because you said there's 5 different sleep cycles. Is that right? Or 5 stages of sleep?
5 stages of sleep. So we tend to go through about 5 cycles of sleep a night, you know, about 90 minutes, which is often why 7.5 hours sleep is often what works.
I see, because that's 5 blocks of 1.5 hours.
You just did your maths. I'm very impressed.
Yeah. Oh, no, I just guessed. I didn't actually figure it out, but I've just figured it out. Yeah, gold. Okay, interesting. Yes. So
because everyone's sleep cycle might be, you know, 10 or 20 minutes different. That's why. That's why the 7 to 9 by the time those 5 are added up. So we tend to go through 5 sleep cycles, and they consist of 5 stages of sleep. But I won't overcomplicate it. So 2 of those are light sleep. So, you know, that sleep that just as you're dozing off, and you often have that random, you know, your leg moves or twitches or whatever as you're just slowly falling asleep.
Or you have like a random thought. I had that when I was falling asleep from my nap.
Yes.
Like an hour ago, not even an hour ago. That sense, it was an hour ago actually. Just that sense of like a weird thought drops into your head, and that's when I know I'm falling asleep. I love that feeling. Exactly. Yeah.
Often if I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm going back to sleep, I go, I just had a weird thought. That's a good thing.
Me too. I'm like, yes, I'm falling asleep.
So stage 1 and 2 are light sleep, and then your beautiful deep sleep, and then REM sleep.
Okay.
And REM sleep, as you'll probably know, is your, do you know what REM sleep stands for?
Rapid eye movement. And that's your dream sleeping, isn't it? That's when you have your
dream sleep. So we all dream for about 2 hours a night. Mm-hmm. And when we're dreaming, our eyes are closed, watching whatever very random dream we're having. I cannot believe our brain can even think what it is.
Yeah.
And, but the good thing is when we're in REM sleep, we're paralyzed, so we can't act out our dreams. So that's a good thing.
Oh, I never knew that.
So even though there's a lot of brain activity, incredible brain activity, sometimes more activity than when our brains awake, which is when we process all the information we've learned during the day.
Yeah.
So it's light sleep, deep sleep, and REM sleep.
So question for you then, if I'm watching Lexi sleep and she's like twitching, or, you know, even if you watch a cat or a dog sleeping and they're like, it's almost like they're running in their sleep.
Yes.
So are we actually dreaming then when we're moving in our sleep or not, if we're paralyzed?
No.
I always assume people were dreaming. They're not. Okay, cool.
There are the occasional people who wake up and they're still paralyzed. It's trying to think of the word. That's quite creepy. So you wake up and that paralysis has still continued and you're just going, oh my gosh, I can't move. So that paralysis in the wrong stage. But no, what you will see, and it looks really weird if you watch your child dreaming and you see those eyes just moving back and forward.
It's strange. They're possessed.
So those are the stages of sleep.
Love. So good. Okay, I'm like, well, I'll ask you the questions I was meant to ask you. Can I just jump to one question on what you just said a second ago? I know there's a few different schools of thought as to whether or not you can actually catch up on sleep. Like if you've got a sleep debt of, like, for example, Lexi had hand, foot and mouth a few weeks ago and we had 10 nights back to back of disrupted sleep, all 3 of us, because of it. Do you believe you can catch up on sleep, or is it more just, okay, well, that the horse is bolted, just kind of kick back in and try and sleep as normally as you can again?
Oh, look, you can certainly catch up on sleep. It doesn't catch up completely, but you catch up so that you're starting to get back on track. I think the thing is, I was talking in a workshop today and one of the staff came up and he said, can I catch up on the weekend? And I said, well, you realise that if you're doing that all the time, it means you're not the best version of you for those 5 days a week.
Yeah, constantly I.e. most of your life.
on 2 days. So everything that I've talked about for those 5 days is not happening and you're going, yay, I can catch up on the weekend. Yeah. So yes, you can catch up, and that's why when we are unwell, we sleep for longer to catch up and get better. Mm. So yes.
Yeah, your body needs the rest. Yeah.
So true. Consistency is key, because a lot of people change their sleep between week and weekends and they'll go out later, they'll shift their body clock and then come Monday morning, they're getting up 4 hours earlier than they did on a Sunday and their body clock. Very confused.
Yeah, it's funny you say that actually, because I find I would have more energy during the week than I would at the weekend, and I think it's because I'm being more, I guess, better sleep hygiene, like getting to bed at a better time, getting up consistently. I mean, naturally waking up between kind of 5:30 and 6:30 every morning, whereas at the weekend, that's when I'll, you know, let myself stay up watching Formula One with Wade on Netflix and try.
Adaptable.
Sorry,
you're so adaptable.
Yeah, you think you are, but then you know I'm waking up at the normal time. So as in, because obviously small child in the house. So yeah, that's fascinating. I know that you have spoken with Dr. Christy Goodwin, as in you will both kind of co-host workshops and so on. You guys work in very similar fields. So for anyone who's not familiar with Dr. Christy Goodwin, she's an expert on digital well-being, and She's been on the show a couple of times. She was also an expert on my Create Academy program. And something we actually talked about as part of the Create Academy program was the fact that technology can almost steal us of our creativity, because we spend so much time consuming other people's content via technology or social media, whatever it might be, that we don't actually create our own. And something that Christy touched on in the module that she did as part of Create Academy was the idea of chronotypes and how we can work in with our chronotypes better. Could you speak to this as well, Lisa? Because I know it's something you speak to as well, you speak to as part of your work.
Sure. So our chronotype is really our master biological clock that just ticks away. And we all have a slightly different chronotype. So a lot of people just talk about three basic chronotypes. I'm not sure what Christy talked about.
She spoke to the three, yeah.
Three, okay. So really just a morning lark. So you're much more vibrant first thing in the morning. Other people are just much better in the evening, and some are just somewhere in the middle. There is another Dr. Michael Bruce, who I mentioned wrote the Sleep Doctor's Diet Plan. He's actually written a whole book called The Power of When. So I guess the whole interest in getting to understand your body clock is to just find when your peak productivity times are and just allow you to plan your time wisely. So it impacts when we best time to exercise, best time to eat. But I guess key is your productivity times. So there are some people that turn up to an 8 o'clock meeting and really their peak time is 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, we've got to, you know, we can't adapt everybody in the workplace, but it certainly impacts the way we function and our energy levels.
Yeah. So with the first chronotypes, that's the lark. That's the, I would definitely identify being a lark. Like I can get up early and be productive early in the morning. What are the other two called then?
So evening owls. So some people just are so productive working late in the evening, which is definitely not me. And then somewhere in between. So yeah, it's just whether you identify really early in the morning, really late at night, able to work, or you're just somewhere in between. And I think the challenge is if you're married to the opposite, then it's,
yes. Yeah.
I think it's just key to just do an exercise yourself. You know, they're all online about what chronotype you are, so that you can relate together and just also support, you know, if you're in a relationship, but also your children, they all have slightly different body clocks. And certainly for me, living with teenagers, then their body clock tends to shift a bit. So I just say to them, you want the best answer possible. Don't ask me after 8:30, not because I'm asleep, but just because I'm starting to wind down.
Your brain's winding down. Yeah.
You want the answer you want, then ask me a little earlier.
Yeah. So true. And I guess how that affects our sleep is if you're a lark like me, you want to be going to bed early and getting up early, whereas an owl is probably going to be going to bed at, God, sometimes I'm mentoring someone, they tell me they go to bed at like midnight or 2 a.m. and I'm like, wow. But that's because that's their chronotype. They're literally just coming alive at 6 o'clock, which is when my brain is just done.
Yeah. And then you just need to, if you've got to adapt for work, then it's about getting sunlight or any sort of light first thing in the morning to switch that melatonin, your sleepy hormone, off, and then just bring back your body clock by, you know, half an hour a night till you get into that stage that works for what you need to get up and do, because we all have work environments that don't necessarily adapt to our own chronotype. So
that's true.
Improve your own, you know, body clock by light first thing in the morning and dim light at night to refine that.
Yeah, love that. It's almost like jet lag, isn't it? They say a great way to deal with jet lag is if you are landing somewhere in the morning is to get out in the light as early as you can, whereas if you're landing in the evening, it's to stay dark so you don't kick them. You're trying to kick the melatonin in the dark. Have I got that?
Absolutely. And if you are doing a lot of traveling, there are actually some glasses called retimer glasses where you put them on and they have the blue-green light, so that you'd put them on as soon as you wake up in the morning to get rid of that melatonin. That's your sleepy hormone still in your brain, and it helps you do that much more quickly. So for people who have problems with their body clock or lots of travel, then these retimer glasses would be most effective.
That's so cool. I never knew that. That's awesome. Because, yeah, I've seen people on flights take melatonin.
Yes.
To try and kind of get there when it's still during the day where they're leaving, if that makes sense. And then, take caffeine tablets when they land. They've got it all drugged out.
Using the opposites, like the blue blocking glasses at night and then the retimer glasses in the morning.
So true. You talk in your work about the idea of sleep thieves, which I'm really fascinated to hear more about. Can you talk to us about what the most common sleep thieves you see are for this society that we're operating in now?
Absolutely. And I think it goes back to that description we had in the beginning of can't sleep, won't sleep.
Yes.
I think what we need to acknowledge is that the way we live our life now we think is normal, but we're not supposed to be living this level of busyness. And I think just understanding a few of these, there's Dr. Matthew Walker has written a fantastic book, international bestseller, called Why We Sleep. And he's a neuroscientist, psychiatrist, and sleep specialist. So he's got the whole lot going on. And he wrote this book, and he just gave five more long-term reasons of why we're not getting the sleep. And I think they need to be spoken about first, because we just think, oh, that's normal, the fact that we've got so much light around that wasn't always there. So that's impacting our sleep, particularly light from our technology. Also the whole work thing, like our busy lifestyle and porous borders between when you start and finish work, you know.
Love that idea, porous borders. That's so good. Yeah. And particularly I think in COVID times, I mean, we've seen that from so many people working from home and continuing to work from home. I mean, most people I know in corporate have transitioned back to the office, but they're still working from home maybe half the week. So I love that idea, the porous borders. Yeah.
And I think, you know, we take that for granted, but, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, we didn't have all this technology to be able to do that. So we had these defined hours, and we just think this is normal. Same with all the light from our technology. Also stress and anxiety, we're just generally more, you know, stressed out society. So that's probably the third. Alcohol and caffeine are much more widely available, I think, and both of those are enemies of sleep, but that's two different topics. And also what we were talking about before with Arianna Huffington is he talks about a sleep stigma, so that in a developing world we're just associating sleep with weakness. And he talks about, you know, he'll do presentations like I do, and people come around and talk to him at the end. And he said they'd rather wait for 45 minutes to line up behind everybody else for the confessional to say, oh, I seem to be one of those people who need 8 or 9 hours of sleep. And he's going, you know, well, why wouldn't you? That's actually a completely normal amount. And, you know, we look at a baby who's sleeping and we don't go, what a lazy baby, you know. But we've started to associate that, and we really just need to get rid of that badge of honor and start supporting each other with that versus constantly, you know, the badge of honor of a busy lifestyle or lack of sleep. So I think those are the sort of overall situation. And then we've got, you know, if I did a workshop with, you know, leadership or staff, they'll often talk about the work situation, the, you know, family balance, stress, and, you know, a lot of the other things that we've spoken about. So it's sort of the overall, you know, world changes, and then there's the individual changes that are impacting people.
Yeah. Just thinking as you're talking about that, just again, just the story we tell ourselves internally, like the internal monologue we have about our sleep. And what book was it I read? In The Miracle Morning, in the book The Miracle Morning, Hal Elrod talks about the fact that the last thought we have before we go to sleep is the first thought we have when we wake up in the morning. So if you're, you know, like me last night, I'm going to switching off the light at, you know, I got to bed at like 10, did my journaling, did my whole evening routine type thing, did some reading, went to sleep at about 10:45, you know, switching off the light, I'm saying, oh my God, I went to bed 2 hours later than I should have tonight. Then that's the first thought we have when we wake up in the morning. It's like, oh crap, I didn't get enough sleep. And also I'm just thinking, how rare is it that you talk to someone and say, oh, how did you sleep last night? And they say, yeah, really well. And I walk with my friend Stacey. Most weeks we'll go for a walk on a Wednesday morning. So I'll meet her at 6:30 on the corner, on her street corner. And I'll say, how are you? And she's like, I had the best sleep last night. And it's just so refreshing when she says it, because how rarely do you hear that? You know, normally we're so negatively biased to talk about all the problems we had with our sleep rather than the great sleeps we had when we do have them. So I think that's really powerful. It's almost at that inverse competitive sport, you know, how much worse can we sleep between us? And can I also just say with parents, particularly of babies or small kids, I mean, it gets fucking competitive. Lexi was sick that time with the hand, foot and mouth. I mean, Wade and I were just so bickery during the night. I mean, most nights it was fine, but some nights when I felt like I'd done more heavy lifting with looking after than he had, and he'd gotten 10 minutes more sleep than I had. I mean, it can really go downhill very quickly, I think.
Yes, and two key points there is it is about the way you wake up in the morning. So I think it's But if you have had lack of sleep, just waking up and going, you know what, I've got through a day before with this little sleep, I'm going to be fine. And there's a difference between being tired, having the same amount of sleep, but being motivated with what you're doing, like you're, you know, writing a book, you know, it's positive what you're doing versus being tired and unmotivated.
Resentful about it, yeah. Something then, I've actually found – sorry, go ahead. Sorry, I thought you finished.
Oh, I was just going to say the other key thing is for people like yourselves with young children. I did a presentation one time, was actually my church. There was about 1,000 people and they were talking about all the key things in relation to, you know, physical health, nutrition. They brought me in to talk about sleep. And this young couple came up to me at the end and I went, oh, thank you so much. And I went, oh, I feel really guilty that I've said all that. And, you know, you are fighting the lack of sleep having a baby. And they said, no, you know, what we took away was blame the sleep, not the person. So that so it doesn't become a personal thing between you two. You go, that's lack of sleep, that's not Lorraine, you know?
Almost so, like separating the person out from it. That's really powerful. Yeah, exactly. I love that.
And I went, oh, I feel better about that now because, you know, like I said at the start of this, I don't want people going away going, oh, this is what's going to happen because I don't have lack of sleep.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah, so true. And crap, there's something else I was going to say to you there. I can't remember what it was. It'll come back to me. So I'm going to jump back because there's a couple of questions I wanted to ask you as you were talking earlier. One of my friends, Leela Lutz, is an absolute health guru. She's a Czech practitioner. She just knows health inside out. And she coaches men and women, but a lot of women. And she looks at them very holistically. So it's not about getting stronger or getting ready for a competition or losing weight. It's really, I mean, she goes into so much detail on their entire lives. Mm-hmm. And something she said to me once is she finds that a lot of women are actually under eating and that's why they're having sleep issues, because they're actually, they might not even feel like they're waking up because they're hungry, but their body's actually hungry. Because if you think about it, if you're trying to get 8 to 9 hours sleep, your body needs fuel for that time. So she's firmly convinced that a lot of women, if not most women, they think that they're not eating, that they think that they're eating too much, but they're actually under eating. Mm-hmm. Have you come across that at all in terms of people actually? I mean, I know I get it, but that's because I'm pregnant. And the first trimester, I literally had 3 snacks a night lined up on the bedside table because I was so hungry all the time. Yes, so have you actually seen that phenomenon at all in your work?
Not so much. It's more about the sleep impacting you being hungrier. But yes, certainly people are, you know, not having the right thing before they go to bed or enough of, you know, a bit like she was talking about. So it is important to make sure that you're having the right food and the right timing of food. But I wouldn't say I go into a lot of detail about that. And
yeah,
certainly,
that's an interesting point which you made it.
And certainly there are some foods that, you know, impact on your quality of sleep and some that support your quality of sleep. Like obviously a great quality magnesium and or foods with magnesium and all sorts of things. But that once again is a whole nother topic.
Yeah, exactly.
But I will, is it okay if I just talk about the impact of alcohol on sleep?
Please, yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, because when I did mental health and wellbeing, I was actually talking at a mental health and wellbeing conference and they had a session for leadership and they were talking about the positive ways we can support a stressful lifestyle and the negative ways we support, not support, but a stressful lifestyle. And within half a second, these leadership said alcohol was, you know, and we all know that. I mean, that's Australia. But I think people, because it is just so common, and I had a girls' weekend, I always say to people, don't shoot the messenger because I love the sound of a champagne.
Oh, best sound. Yeah.
With my school girlfriends of 30 years last weekend. But we realise even just amongst us we had a different relationship with alcohol, and people feel that if they have a drink that it relaxes them and it helps them fall asleep more quickly. Mm-hmm. And it might do that, but what it does is it impacts on our quality of sleep. So it more sedates you versus allowing you to go through your beautiful light sleep, deep sleep and REM sleep. So it just means you're not getting great quality sleep, and half of that feeling of a hangover can simply be that you haven't got great quality sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just getting people to start reframing their, you know, use of alcohol. Sometimes I wish I didn't know so much, but so now it's just realizing the impact of alcohol on our sleep, and therefore the next day you're not feeling so great, and you know then that evening you can go, oh, let's just have a drink.
I actually remember seeing this in action. Oh God, when was it? Lexi was maybe one. We just moved back to Sydney from the Gold Coast, and I was staying with our friend Jack Delosa for a couple of nights at his apartment, and Wade was driving our car down from the Gold Coast to Sydney, and I hadn't seen Jack properly for like, I mean, I think it had been about 5 years since him and I just had time, just the two of us, to hang out. And he has a very, very beautiful French wine collection. And he said, I'll do dinner. I mean, Jack does not cook, which I thought was hilarious. But we got, I think we got Guzman y Gomez. We got tacos. And he opened this beautiful bottle of wine. And we drank it. And we were just talking at like 90 kilometers an hour. And then he opened another one. So we had a bottle of white and a bottle of red, which is a lot of alcohol for me. I mean, in the past, that wouldn't have touch the sides, but Lorraine, over the last 8 years or so, that's a lot of alcohol. So we went to bed. I mean, it was high quality wine. So I woke up the next morning and I felt like pretty good, but I just declined over the day. And Jack, like, we were messaging during the day, he's like, oh my God, I'm so exhausted. I was like, me too. And he showed me later, he wears an Aura ring. So I don't know if you know that they're like the biometric trackers. It's like wearable tech. It's like a ring that you wear and it tracks all of your, it's even more detailed than an iPhone. And he showed me his stats. So the night before we had hung out, he showed me his sleep, and it's almost like a graph. You could see how he had access, and you're giving me so much clarity on this, that deep sleep. Like, you can see where he spent cycles in that deep sleep on his, his app. And then he showed me the previous night that we had been drinking, and he didn't go into deep sleep at all. Like, he stayed in the light sleep. I'm just looking at my notes here. He stayed in the light sleep and the REM sleep. He never actually got into that deep sleep. And we were talking about it, and we're like, oh, and we talked about that whole idea because we were both familiar with it, that really alcohol just sedates you. It's not actually sleep. So I thought that was so interesting to see, to actually see the data almost when he showed it to me that day on his phone. It was really interesting.
Some people are just not going to like that last part of our conversation.
No, I know.
You're wonderful.
You know, how many people? I hear this from so many women. You know, I just need a glass of red just to wind down at night. Like, that's my getting to sleep. But I mean, I'm sure it's what am I saying? I'm sure the amount of alcohol you drink correlates with the amount of sedation you have. I mean, we drank, I mean, that's a skin full of alcohol for me, that a bottle of wine to myself. Holy God.
I think it's one mixing red and white. Story to substantiate sort of what I'm talking about in person, that he can actually read that from his data. I think that's amazing.
It was because I was like, but I slept 8 hours. I don't understand. And he's like, well, actually, yeah. You didn't.
And because people think they've slept that 9 hours, 8 or 9 hours, and they don't correlate that because they've actually been asleep versus that insomnia feeling. And I think your wonderful saying of think of future self, that's where that comes in for me.
And also, when you know better, you do better. I mean, that's the other one I would think of here, is that if you are maybe listening and having a couple of glasses of red every evening is your way of winding down, and you're still feeling exhausted the next day, is, I mean, maybe there's a little nugget there that might help you in your life and to improve the quality of your sleep from going forward. Can we touch on hormones for a minute, Lisa? Because I know there's a very intricate dance that melatonin and cortisol play when it comes to our sleep. And if we are, again, going back to the whole idea of chronic, like we're chronically not sleeping well, that can really play havoc with our hormones. Could you just speak to the impact of sleep or lack of sleep on our hormones for a minute?
Yes, so it impacts, obviously, our appetite hormones, which I've spoken about. It impacts on our sex hormones in different ways. There's so many hormones it impacts on. But in relation to, you're talking about cortisol and melatonin. So I think what we need to realize is that, I think I said it before, is that sleep is a 24-hour situation.
Could you step us through that? Because I wanted to come back to that when you said it earlier on.
So I think we think of sleep as being a nighttime affliction if it's a negative thing, as in call it affliction, if you're having challenges sleeping.
Yeah.
So I can remember when I had insomnia, I was saying to the GP, I said, I've done all these sleep tips, you know, no alcohol, no, all this technology, all these things. I've stopped.
Look, I've tried the lavender oil. I've tried the getting off my tech. Just, yeah, I get you.
But at the end of the day, as I keep saying, because I truly believe it, we're not supposed to be living the lifestyle we live. Mm. And we live too much of our time in flight or fright, which means we're not bringing those levels, unless we're bringing those levels down during the day, then that flows on into the evening. And if your cortisol levels are too high, then cortisol and melatonin are opposite, which means it's hard for your melatonin, which is your beautiful sleepy hormone, which not only helps you fall asleep, but it helps you stay in your deep sleep.
Mm.
So if they're opposite, then that's what's happening. So you can do everything you like about all those sleep tips, but if you're constantly wired, that tired but wired, or during the day. And many people talk about waking up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, yeah, which was me. And I remember my GP said, but I can see you running through Beecroft in the evening. And I went, yes, that's to run off my stress. And she goes, this is before I understood. And she goes, nah, that's not the way it works. Mm. You're creating more cortisol. I went, oh, okay. So.
Whereas you felt like you were burning off the cortisol.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
A little naive. And then overnight, there's so many people that do the 2 or 3 o'clock wake up in the morning. Mm. Why is that? So what happens is overnight, you've got, when you go to bed, you've got a peak level of melatonin that starts to dip as we, you know, go through the night. And then your cortisol, either because you've had too much during the day, starts to override that melatonin, or first thing in the morning, your melatonin starts to peak. So it's really that 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning when, you know, you've got more cortisol than you want in that time. So I think it's just understanding that, we need to be bringing those levels down, you know, whether that's mindfulness, whatever it might be, and a few times a day. We can't expect to treat our body like a machine and just naturally switch it off. For some people, they put their head in the pillow and that works for them. But for others, it's like, I've been going all day and why can't I fall asleep? Try and switch my brain off. So it's understanding that concept. Yeah.
Interesting. Can I just add a level to that as well? And this is coming from traditional Chinese medicine, that the in traditional Chinese medicine, there's a 24-hour body clock. And it basically means that our body, over 2-hour intervals, moves through each of the major organs in our bodies. So I will often find, for example, if I've had too much sugar the night before, or alcohol or caffeine or whatever it might be, I'll wake up between 1 and 3 a.m., which is when your liver, that's when your liver is detoxifying. Yes, exactly. That's when the focus is on your liver. Yeah. And I'll also find, I mean, obviously not right now, given I'm pregnant and it's a while since I got really, really hammered. But if I get really, if I drink a lot, or if I drink like heavy red wine, I'll wake up between 1 and 3 and it's like my cheeks are just burning. It's like, it's literally like my liver is just burning through all of the alcohol that I put into it, or the sugar or whatever I put in. So that's just something else to think about, that if you are waking up consistently at a certain time, maybe just look into that traditional Chinese medicine body clock, because it might indicate, like, for example, your lungs are from 3 to 5 a.m., for example. So I know Lexi is having, like, she tends, like, if she's got like one kind of thing that catches her, it's her lungs. Like, she'll get coughs. That tends to be her. You know, some kids get belly stuff. Hers tends to be lungs. She'll generally wake up between 3 and 5 because it's, yeah, obviously lung issues if she's got a cough or something going on.
No, and it's so true. And that's why when you were talking about the alcohol as well, I was going to add that about the liver detoxing around that time of night as well.
Yeah, yeah. And then I'll wake up, you know, at 4 or 5 and my body's totally cool. It's just like I'd almost need to just fire up to get rid of the alcohol. With new parents, so asking this as someone who's about to head back into newborn baby land, I'm telling everyone, no, I've ordered another sleeper. It's fine, because Lexi was an absolute dream. Like, we genuinely did not get any sleep deprivation with Lexi. We were very, very, very lucky there. But for anyone who's really in it, and I know I've got some friends even who've got 7 or 8 month old babies who are waking up 4 or 5 times a night still, what advice would you give to people to, I guess, survive that level of sleep deprivation when it's been going on? Or, you know, I've got friends whose kids only slept through from 2 or 3 years old. Do you have any advice from your perspective on how people can deal with that?
I do think get help where you can, because there are certainly some experts in that area. And I think get help when you can, because you need to understand what's going on without that baby sleeping. And I remember with my younger daughter, she had chronic ear infections, and I go, well, you can't control cry a child who's in pain, so how do you know? So
100%, yeah.
Getting to the bottom of the why, I think it's making sure that you have as least stress going on in your world as possible, as in don't be leaping back into work and having other stress going on in your world, and just cutting yourself some slack. And then as a couple, just acknowledging that impact on your mood and not taking that personally, and supporting each other wherever possible. Yeah. So I think the key is to get help where you can from some of those key organisations to help with that age group.
Yeah, I love
that. And then cutting yourself some slack the next day, you know, not having to do everything, and Yeah, just giving yourself some breathing space.
Yeah. Where does napping come into all of this, Lisa? So I know I told you I had a 15-minute power nap before I called you this afternoon. Where does napping come into all of this? Like, are you pro-napping, anti-napping? Does it depend on the person's situation?
Oh, look, I'm just so impressed that you can do that.
Oh, really?
Because I look at my husband and I go, if we're about to go out and maybe we've been really tired, I'll choose exercise to give me an upper before we go out.
Yeah.
He's just able to nap. I'm going, oh, hate that. I mean, I love it for him. I'm so happy for him. But anyway.
I think 34 and a half weeks pregnant, it probably helps with the napping situation as well, though. Oh,
how exciting. So, no, definitely not anti-napping. So the couple of things I talk about with napping is the length of time and when you nap.
Okay, fill us in.
Often I, you know, get hands up who, you know, often has a nap. And then, particularly if it's teenagers, I say, keep it to a 20-minute nap only, I say, but wait until I finish the answer. And they look at me as if I'm, you know, handing a bit of pain over to them. So, but you've just done that. So when you nap for too long, so more than 20, 25 minutes, you go into your deep sleep zone. So by sleeping for 20 or so minutes, you're staying in your light sleep and it gives you a boost. It gives you a power nap afterwards for a couple of hours. So it's fantastic.
Because I feel great now. Like, I feel really good. Yeah.
And so that's fantastic that you've got that down pat. So it's keeping it to 20, 25 minutes. Don't go into your deep sleep. But if you need a longer nap, then go for the 90 minutes. Go through all your sleep cycles so that you're still waking up.
Yep, so pick one or the other almost if you can.
In your light sleep, exactly. So don't do the in-between. And obviously don't do the 90 minutes very often because it will impact on your consistent sleep time. And what it does, we have what's called a sleep pressure. Our body clock is influenced by sleep pressure and our circadian rhythm. So the sleep pressure starts as soon as you wake up in the morning and builds up during the day. And when you have too long a nap, it pulls away from that sleep pressure. It might make it harder for you to fall asleep at night. And if you have a nap too late, you know, after, say, 4 o'clock, then once again it might impact on your ability to fall asleep and have a great quality sleep.
We call it, if Lexi falls asleep in the car at like 4 or 5 o'clock, we call it a danger nap.
Yes.
Like, we're in the danger zone. She's not going to go to sleep tonight. Have you heard of a nappuccino?
Yes, I have.
Can you explain? You'll probably word it better than I have. I heard about this a while ago and I can't drink coffee. So I don't think I'd be a good trial, but I really want way to try it.
The nappuccino, because apparently the effect of coffee takes 20, 25 minutes. So it means you can have a boost, the benefit of both a nap and feel that power nap afterwards, but also feel the coffee kick in at the same time.
Yeah. Have you tried it?
No. One, because I'm, you know, obviously clearly not chilled enough to learn to nap. Two, I'm very, very cautious of drinking coffee in myself at the moment. Like, I don't have great benefits for, you know, keeping you focused, but I had a bit of adrenal fatigue about 2 months ago.
And
your body often doesn't know the difference between adrenaline and caffeine, and then
that's why I can't drink it.
Which is a really big message for a lot of, you know, listeners at the moment, because it, you know, caffeine works differently in different people, and for some of you, you know, that mild anxiety that you're feeling, you know, all the time can simply be pulled back by not having coffee, because we get into that, I'm tired, so I'll have a coffee, and then it impacts on your quality of sleep. And then you wake up, I'm tired, I'll have a coffee. So that cycle, whereas for me, I might have half coffee or one coffee in the morning, and that's it, because I need to look after my adrenals. And some people don't even know that their adrenals are, you know, pushed to the max, and coffee is just putting them over the limit.
Yeah, totally get it. You kind of get addicted to being on that kind of adrenalized state as well. I would love to try it, but if I have one sip of coffee, I feel it the second I sip it. So definitely wouldn't be getting to sleep. Too sensitive to it. So, Lisa, we've talked a lot here, and I know I've taken lots of notes, and I'm sure lots of people are having lots of aha moments. So thank you for being so generous with everything you know. If we are struggling with our sleep, as in if you did a bit of a sleep quiz and people are like, tick, 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 or, you know, for those people listening who are saying, whoa, this is chronic for me, and maybe this has been a bit of a wake-up call for some people listening as well, where do we go? Like, do you go to your GP? I know my friend Rashenda used to see a sleep doctor who she said changed her life. Like, who do we go to? What's the first protocol for this?
Great question. So I think there's a late effect. So firstly, start off with sleep tips. which yes. you'll find anywhere, or I can pop some in. So it's just the general, you know, what's your motivation to improve your sleep, prioritizing the impact of technology, mm-hmm. all those sort of things, realizing that sleep's not just the nighttime affliction, all those sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
And just, by the way, exercise is the best thing you can do for great quality deep sleep.
Mm.
So thinking about that. So first start with sleep tips. And then there are some online, which I'll put in as well, some online programs for when you're challenged falling asleep. Mm-hmm. But then what we need to realize, as you were just saying, is that sleep doctors and sleep psychologists exist. So some people don't even know there's such a thing as a sleep psychologist.
No, I never heard of it. Okay.
You know, if you know, you're so brilliant about in your world, Lorraine, about getting help in different areas where mm-hmm. you need it. And I think it's realizing that if your sleep is impacting you like it was me, you know, 5 or 6 years ago,
mm-hmm.
then getting help is the best thing you can do. And it's learning, you know, it's learning about the sleep hygiene. It's learning about, you know, if you're lying awake for 20 minutes or longer, don't stay in bed because your, you know, brain starts to associate bed with a frustrating place to be. It's learning all the cognitive behavior therapy and all those different things. But you also might need to go to a sleep specialist, which is more for physical, so for snoring. So I'd just say, if any of you are snoring, of course us ladies don't snore, we've never done that, but if you're being told you snore, but particularly if any of your children snore or your partner snores, then get help, because for some people it's got terrible impacts. So, and they don't actually realise that the impact on their, you know, deep sleep or for their children, they can actually be misdiagnosed with ADHD when it's actually their tonsils in their way or something like that. So if you're getting a reasonable quantity of sleep, I should say, and you don't feel refreshed, then you need to look into why, whether there's a physical reason for that. If you are finding it difficult to fall asleep, which you're always completely aware of, then getting the help that you need. And just realise that GPs aren't brilliant. Some of them are great. GPs get 1 hour of sleep training in their whole 6 years. Holy and yet crap. You think sleep impacts every single part of your life.
Yeah.
So sometimes you'll be taught, you know, you'll be given sleep medication instead of looking at what's causing it. You need to get to the bottom of what's causing it. Certainly a sleep medication can break the cycle briefly. So in your mind you think, I can sleep again. But once again, many of them are sedating you versus giving you quality sleep. So just be aware that your GP may not know where to get help from.
Yeah. So it sounds like we need to almost like take power in our own hands as to where we find these people. So where do we find them?
So just looking up a sleep specialist and sleep psychologist.
Sleep specialist or sleep psychologist, that's what we're looking for.
Yeah. Okay. And for example, in Sydney, there's the Wolcock Institute. There are sleep labs, there are, you know, sleep communities where they'll have a sleep specialist, a psychologist, a nose and throat, all put in together. Mm. And even dentists are picking up sleep issues more.
Of course,
and more.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah.
With the sleep apnea and all those sort of things.
Yeah.
So fascinating. Start with your sleep tips. Start with online program called Sleepio if it's more challenges falling asleep, and then your sleep specialist and sleep psychologist for more physical or emotional reasons that you are not sleeping.
Got it. Love that. Thank you. And I think, I mean, and I'm sure you would echo this, Lisa, as well, it's just to say, like, why suffer? You know, if you're not sleeping well and it's affecting your life, like, why the fuck put yourself through it? And also, can I just say, put everyone else in your life through it as well? So I really do feel, and I've said this to Wade, you know, if our child at a certain point, obviously when it's appropriate, if they're the second baby isn't sleeping, I mean, it just affects everyone. Like, I've seen friends go through absolute hell because they're not sleeping. So I think it's almost applying that to ourselves as adults as well as grown-ups. If we're not sleeping, like, just there's no need to suffer. It sounds like there's a whole world of help out there, and it sounds the benefits are just manifold, you know, not just in the next kind of 24 to 48 hours in terms of our mood, but longer term in terms of our long-term mental health as well.
And I will say, whatever stage you're in, whether it's, you know, babies, no children, any children, menopause, like literally 2 months ago I had shocking sleep, and then just by taking some progesterone, for example, oh my gosh, I feel so much calmer and I'm able to sleep.
So
actually finding out what it is for you, because truly I feel like a different person.
Yeah. Oh, I can imagine. Yeah. And that, yeah, there's different, almost like that, like that idea of life comes in seasons. So certain seasons when your sleep might need support in different ways. So I know for me early last year, for example, with the night sweats, it was acupuncture that made a huge difference to me, that it basically rebuilt my body from the inside out. That's what it felt like. So yeah, I think just please don't suffer, anyone listening. And also I just want to say, if this episode has been confronting for anyone, this conversation, it's going back to a couple of things that we both shared today, Lisa. It's that when we know better, we do better. Mm-hmm. And just taking the small steps to start to get yourself out of that sleep funk, I think it's really important. And you've had so, I'm going to pop all the resources you mentioned. I've been frantically taking notes if you've been speaking. I'll pop all those resources into the show notes as well. And obviously pop a link to your work in there too, so people can come find out more about you as well.
Wonderful.
Amazing. Now, is there anything we missed? I feel like we just went on a whistle-stop tour of a very big topic. Is there anything you feel like we missed? Anything you'd like to say?
So, no, I don't think so. I think we covered it all. Obviously, you and I both talk quickly, so hopefully everyone
could keep up.
Yes.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time, Lisa. Absolutely love your work. And yeah, I just think it's so important what you're doing. I know you work with both adults and in schools. So I just, hats off to you for doing what you do. It sounds like a fascinating area and very, 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 very much needed as well in this crazy society we live in.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for having me. It's been fantastic.
Thank you. Loved it. So there you have it, the amazing Lisa Maltman. I'm sure, like me, you learned so many nuggets on the whole topic of sleep. And as we did talk about in this episode a few times, when we know better, we do better. So I really don't want you to feel confronted or overwhelmed or stressed or losing sleep about this sleep episode. It's all about just becoming more aware of what our own challenges are, our individual challenges are around sleep. And as Lisa steps through, almost like that escalation process of going and making the changes that you need to make in order to get adequate rest. And as I said, as we close down our chat, it's just please don't suffer. There's so much help out there, as Lisa has talked through, lots of experts like her and lots of help available to really get on top of your sleep. And as someone, as I said, who did struggle with their sleep early last year, it was absolutely life-changing to get back on top of it. So if you want to find out more about Lisa and her speaking and the work that she does, you can find her at thesleepconnection.com.au. And I've also included the resources that she mentioned in the episode in the show notes as well. So thank you so much, as always, for joining this episode. And I'm looking forward to bringing you another episode next week. Until then, have a great week ahead. Thank you for being part of this week's episode. It was remarkable to have you. I am always keen to hear your thoughts, questions, ideas, and suggestions for future topics for the podcast. So please get in touch on Instagram. My handle is @LorraineRemarks and through my website, lorrainemurphy.com.au. If you're enjoying what I'm putting out here, please do rate, review, or subscribe to the podcast so more people can find out about it and we can build this special community. Or even better, do all three. Chat to you next week.